General Graves B. Erskine, but we had a different concept. General Graves B. Erskine was a prominent combat leader during World War II. He was deputy commander of the 5th Amphibious Corps during the Marianas Campaign and later commanded the 3rd Marine Division during the Battle for Iwo Jima. Before World War II, however, from 1937 to 1940, Erskine served as the section chief with the Marine Corps Schools Command. During this time, Marines experimented with equipment to conduct amphibious operations in combat. Their work in developing equipment and the tactics and doctrine to best employ this equipment paid tremendous dividends when the Marine Corps went to war in the Pacific. In this passage from an oral history interview done by historian Ben Frank in 1969, General Erskine recalls how some key amphibious equipment was developed on the eve of World War II.
It seems to me that at this period of time, all of the early initial studies in amphibious warfare technique and doctrine was being collated. There had been enough of the fleet landing exercises, Flexus perhaps by now, with experiments on the West Coast Expeditionary Force, the FMF out there, and perhaps on the East Coast, down in Vegas, to indicate what some of the problems were.
Yes, that was one of the important things that we were doing in the schools at that time. And I don't know that any one person could take credit for developing the various techniques that we finally came out with, but because many people were involved in it. One of our great problems at that particular period was having a suitable landing boat. We had a boat board, and the boat board would come up with various types of boats that they had seen, but we had nothing resembling the ramp bow. And matter of fact, that was thought to be more or less impossible by members of the board, I think. But Mr. Higgins, down in New Orleans, came up with the ramp bow boat, and he brought it up to New River. This was after I left the schools, and ran some tests with it. At that time, we had to land our artillery by towing a boat that had no engine in it. It had a small, what you might call gangplanks to get the artillery off with. But we were absolutely up against it to carry a tank of any size and get it ashore. So Higgins, in his peculiar way, finally built a tank glider, which was also the ramp type, brought it up and tested it. I remember one of the tests, which I didn't attend, was conducted down in the Norfolk area. They loaded an artillery piece on one of the Navy-type design boats, the one that was towed, and Higgins put the tank in his ramp bow boat, and it was a pretty rough day. And they started across the bay there, and we were minus one tank when we got to the other side, plus one boat. But the Higgins tank glider negotiated the crossing in excellent manner. From that time on, that was proof that sort of got us by this big boat board in Washington, that maybe they didn't know everything in the Navy Department about boating at sea.
Well, this was one of the problems, was it not, in the development of amphibious techniques and warfare techniques and doctrine, the fact that the Navy had a correlated responsibility for developing the landing craft.
That's right.
And the transports to carry amphibious assault force. And they weren't keeping up with it.
They didn't have the concept of getting their Marines ashore. The same concept that we had. We had to land with a unit integrity and be able to fight from the moment we went ashore. They expected us at that time to carry very light equipment so they could jump out of these old motorcycle type boats and run ashore. But we had a different concept. In order to fight, there was a certain amount of equipment, certain types of equipment that we needed if we were going to be successful. And this day of the banana warfare was over. In the concept of, I think, most Marines, we had to have modern equipment, and we had to have modern ships. The ships had to have hoisting gear that could hoist the boats aboard and lower the boats and hoist all of our heavy equipment and put it in the holds. They didn't have it in those days. And it was pretty hard. They'd think about how much money it's going to cost. Well, one of our answers to that was always, how much is your freedom worth? You can't be penny-wise on this kind of stuff. We've got to have it. And a few naval officers finally got the idea of this thing. When they found out that they were going to be involved in this thing, it was a little different story. And involved in a big way. And we had any number of types of boats tested, but we ended up with the ramp bow boat as our standard landing boat.
Now, by this time, say 38, 39, the plan was to think us down at Quantico, and of course an FTP-167, are pretty well lined out what the conduct of a moving ashore was going to be. Intelligence, well, we built this up. There was a rating of greater awareness of type of intelligence, the estimate of the situation. And of course, we had the five-paragraph operation order. But there are certain ancillary problems, were there not, such as logistics, which
yes,
remained a constant problem throughout the war.
Yes, logistics was always a problem. But we learned a great deal before we actually got into the war. But we had other problems. Many of the areas that we probably would be assigned to had coral reefs. And the Ramfow boat was not the answer to the coral reef. So we were at the same time working on the amphibian tractor. And a great deal of money was spent on the research and so forth. And another thing we needed was waterproofing of vehicles. Drew Trulak, I think, played a great part in developing that. I remember while we were down at Quantico with the amphibious corps headquarters, Drew took a jeep out and with improvised material, he waterproofed this jeep so that it could at least run out of a landing boat with water up over the seats in the jeep. Well, we ran a number of experiments on that, and I'm not sure who actually conducted the final test on it, but we came up with pretty good waterproofing for the jeeps to get them out. And I also remember that we at the headquarters, and I think Brute did also, have a hell of a time explaining to the Quartermaster General of the Marine Corps why this jeep was ruined and who the hell authorized him to put it out there in salt water and put all these little attachments on it. And why did we want to have a jeep that would be amphibious in a way? Well, the answer to that was, we want to get the damn thing ashore.
General Erskine reveals a key aspect of Marine ethos, innovation and out-of-the-box thinking. In the preceding passage, he tells how Marines developed a concept for amphibious warfare, then found the equipment necessary to support the concept. They did not settle for the equipment, boats in this case, that the Navy bureaucracy offered. To get the necessary equipment, Marines circumvented bureaucratic speed bumps. In the case of Victor Krulak's work in developing waterproofing gear, we see a Marine officer become personally involved to obtain what was needed so that jeeps could move through high water to get to the beach. All these actions are remarkable considering that the country was not at war and there was otherwise no sense of urgency. These Marines provided the necessary urgency. Because of their determination and drive, when the country went to war a few years later, Marines had the key equipment that enabled them to successfully execute amphibious assaults. In so doing, they proved that amphibious assaults could be successfully executed against a well-defended beach, something that had been strongly doubted before. How are Marines today being taught to think creatively, to be innovative in developing solutions to problems? When a Marine suggests an innovative solution that goes against the standard, are they encouraged or rebuked? For more information on Marine Corps innovative thinking, consider the following readings. First to Fight by Victor H. Krulak, Military Innovation in the Interwar Period by Alan Millett and Williamson Murray, A Soldier's Dilemma from the Marine Corps Gazette, November 1986 by Victor H. Krulak, Utmost Savagery, The 3 Days of Tarawa by Colonel Joseph Alexander, and The U.S. Marines and Amphibious Warfare by Jeter Isley and Philip Crowell.